Okay, uniqueness. So I have to try to figure out a way to make this not fluffy, right? Make some specific recommendations. Let me get started. It's interesting. When you think about what uniqueness is about, and I'll get there with the practicality, hopefully, but when you think about what uniqueness is about, is it's about, you know, how sometimes our kids can bring out in us issues of our own that are unresolved. You know, it's sometimes they have a way of doing that. I'll open with a story stories sometimes illustrate things in a very powerful way. A story from a while back in my career where I had a kid, a 15-year-old girl, comes to my office, and she had totally shut down academically, totally shut down. We do an evaluation. She's clearly a very smart kid. It's not potential. It's not an undiagnosed learning disability. It's not attention deficit. She's clearly just shut down. She's a sweet kid. And if you want to find out something, sometimes you meet with her parents. I met with her parents to try to find out what the deal was. And I was having a hard time exactly figuring out what was happening. So when all else fails, I asked the parents, what were you doing at age 15? What were you doing when you were this age? Masavo simon labanim, right? I turned to the father. I say, tell me what was happening when you were 15. What were you doing academically? He said, let me tell you about. He says, you have to know my history a little bit. He says, my history is that my parents, when they were 15, they were in concentration camps. And Hitler robbed them of the chance of having any kind of high school education. And they managed to survive the camps. They get out. They meet in a DP camp. They come to this country. They start an incredibly successful business. I'm their only child, he says. And what happens is that I am raised by these parents who never had a childhood. They never had an adolescence. And they tell me, don't worry about school. Have fun. We never had fun. We had our adolescence robbed from us. And they said, besides, there's a wonderful family business. You'll go into it. You don't even have to work so hard in the business. Just your job in life is have fun. You know, families have bumper stickers, okay? So but some families, the bumper sticker is Lakewood or Die. Other families, it's Ivy League or else. Other families, it's Du Chesed or Bust or whatever it is. But what happens if your child's uniqueness is that you don't fit their bumper sticker? You don't fit their bumper sticker. Well, he fit, you know. And I bet a bunch of people are thinking, wow, I wish I had parents like that. Have fun. Wouldn't it have been nice? You know, have fun. Bumper sticker, enjoy yourself. Don't work. Don't work. So what does he do? He, you know, he doesn't push himself too much academically. He goes to college for a couple of years. Goes and settles in a modern Orthodox community. And where nobody in his shul, not a single person in his shul, has anything less than a graduate, at least a master's. So there's him, barely a high school graduate. Next person is a master's, and everybody else has a postgraduate degree. So he feels really dumb. And he swears to himself that when I have children one day, my children are going to go to an Ivy League school. You know? So his new bumper sticker is, he's transformed from a have fun or else. New bumper sticker is what? Is Ivy League or die. Okay. So I turn to the wife and I say, well, tell me, what were you doing at 15? She's laughing and I already see this is going to be a good story. I knew this is going to be a good one. She says, let me tell you about my family. She said, my mom was somebody who was nuts about academic achievement. And she said, you're not going to believe what I'm about to tell you, but she says, I swear to you it's true. She says, once my brother came home with a report card that had a couple of B's on it, and my mom gave out a blood-curdling scream and fainted dead away. Okay? And she says her responses to my report cards were only slightly less strident. So she said, when I got married, okay, I swore to myself that when I have children one day, I just want them to have fun. Okay? What is Hashem is up there, Mizaveg Zivugim, with a great sense of humor. So what happens when a have fun or die person marries an Ivy League or bus person? If you were the 15-year-old daughter of this set of parents, what would you do? Pretty logical. She did the only logical thing you could do. She shut down. She shut down. What's the answer? The answer is the core of uniqueness. The answer is, and what they had to do, is they had to realize you can't parent your children based on your own unresolved business. You can't do that. You just can't do it. You have to parent your children based on their uniqueness, their unique spark, and their unique soul. And if you don't do that, it's going to be a problem. It's going to be a problem. By the way, things came around. Father learned that he couldn't, if he wanted an Ivy League degree, let him go. He had enough money to pay the tuition, you know? And the mother had to learn that, there's something in between her mother's fainting and the, have fun or else kind of bumper sticker. And basically what you have to do often is you have to expand your bumper sticker to let in the various melodies of each kid. So listen to this unbelievable Rav Nachman. It's a great Rav Nachman, and it's sort of like what I'm going to bounce off of as we go through this. So some of you may have heard this. It's called Shirat HaAsavim, made into a song by an Israeli Naomi Shemer. But it's when I saw this, I knew I had to have it. I found an artist who had made a paper cut out of it, and I bought it. It's like, this is what you see when you walk into my office, okay? And here's what Rav Nachman says. Kida ki kol roe veroe yeshlo nigun miyuchad lefi ha'asavim. It says that every leader, and his parents were all leaders, right, has to bring out the unique melody and the unique nourishment for everybody who's their charge, okay? And he goes on to say that for every individual, there's Esav Miuchad, there's a unique source of nourishment as to what will bring out their uniqueness, okay? And it goes on to talk about how it changes according to the temperament and the needs of each individual charge, okay? He called Esav Esav Yeshlo Shira. Every blade of grass has its own unique way of giving nourishment, okay? And then he goes on, Umishirata asavim naase nigun shel haroa. He says that your job is to be almost like a symphony leader with your children. It's to bring out their unique melody. And you know something? What's going to work for one kid isn't going to be what works for another kid. So that's by way of introduction, is how do we bring out the uniqueness of our children? How do we bring out their unique melody? And this is the real challenge, and this is why it can't easily be brought down. The last session I gave very specific recommendations. Here's three recommendations, three things that it's a little different. Here, we're talking about the core of effective parenting, nourishing uniqueness, is actually a situation where you have to almost be a totally different parent to each child. You know? Roy Fogel was talking about my children. Each of my children, I'll talk about them a little bit later, required a slightly different approach. Okay? And that's part of what makes life interesting. And parenting is a people growing machine. Okay? We actually grow by expanding our repertoire to let in the uniqueness of each of our children. Those parents who I opened up with, they grew through that. The father needed, through parenting his daughter in a proper kind of way, to overcome his allergy to the have fun or die bumper sticker. And he needed to balance out his own soul and his own uniqueness in a way that found the middle. And making room for his daughter's uniqueness is what made all the difference. Okay? So that's, and the mother needed to obviously grow in the opposite direction, and that's sort of what's cool about parenting, is we grow. The Vilna Gaon has this unbelievable insight about this issue. He says on Hachsek B'Musar Al Teref Nitzra Kehi Chayecha, it says that you have to hold on to self-correction, it's your life. He goes on to write, Kimasha Ha'adam Chai, he says, a person lives to struggle with the issue that's toughest for them to struggle with. And he says, at the point in life that you're struggling with the issue that's hardest for you, we all know what that issue is for us. And we probably all know what it is for our spouse. There's certain issues that we all have. I don't know anybody, I've yet to meet anybody who doesn't have that. We all have our issues. I have more than my fair share, okay? And he says, at the point that you're struggling with that issue, you were fulfilling your tafkid in life. He says, otherwise, lama lo chayim. What's the purpose of living even if you don't have to struggle? But he says, when you're in that struggle, when you're in the trenches, when you're opening up your repertoire to expand your bumper sticker to let your child's uniqueness in, that's when you are actually fulfilling your role in life. What could be loftier than that? Okay? So that's by way of introduction. Now, what is this? The power of acceptance is one of the most poignant insights the parents gradually arrive at after gaining frontline experience with raising their kids, is how powerful inborn temperament is. Almost everybody I know is a little bit shocked at the reality of raising children and really how little control we have over anything other than basically shaping them in a certain direction. Temperament styles of children differ according to activity level persistence. Okay, these are the nine areas. We all know that if you think those of you who are blessed with more than one children, you know how different they are in these nine areas. It's how persistent are they? Some kids are persistent, other kids give up very easily. This is all variations on the theme of normal. Some are distractible, others are focused. Some respond to novel situations by approaching or withdrawing. Some handle transitions well, some not so well. Some look at the glass of water as half empty, some as half full. Some are intense, some are sensitive to sound, touch, or light. Some are regular and easy, and others are just tougher. And you know what? It's incredibly different kind of thing. We all know very famous Rosham Shrafal Hirsch on last week's Parsha, where he says an unbelievable thing, especially in the expanded version of Rav Hirsch, on Vayigdalu Hana'arim. He goes on to say world history would have been completely different, totally different, if Esav's uniqueness was properly nourished. He says the problem with Esav was that he was sent to the wrong school. He had a red temperament. He had an attention deficit. He should have gone to a school for attention deficit kids, not to shame Ve'aver. He says, had Esav gone to a school for a red temperament, he would have reached his potential and would have reflected the home he grew up in. But because he was fit into the wrong kind of bumper sticker in a way, that's what led to something that we're suffering for to this very day. The events in Mumbai in India last week is directly related to this, according to Rav Hirsch. Okay? Quite a powerful statement. Nobody could get away with saying it today, but boy, is it a true statement. It's an incredibly true statement. The Vilna Gaon, Achanoch L'Nar Al Pi Darko, talking about the importance of being open to the needs of somebody with a more disruptive red temperament, which is really what we call now an executive function deficit. Kid with low frustration tolerance, problem taking the perspective of others, easily short fuse, inattention, impulsivity, etc., the whole nine yards. He says the following incredible insight. He says, you know something, you could take a kid with that kind of ADHD temperament. He said this over 200 years ago. Ata yishma lecha me'es yirasa oscha. He'll listen to you now out of fear. Okay? Because you can get a kid to do pretty much anything when they're young. But be'es yusar olcha me'al tzavara. When you get your foot off their neck, yusar misa. They're going to pull back. You can't change somebody's basic temperament. You could shape it. You could put it in a different direction, but you can't shatter it. And again, that's what's poignant about raising children is as we get to that awareness. I once, when I was director of psychology at North Shore Hospital, so we used to invite these people for grand rounds for lectures. So we once had the head of child psychology at Harvard come and give us a talk. And he gets up and he says, you know something he said? He's a world-renowned child psychologist. He says, I didn't have children until I was in my early 40s. I got married late, he tells us. He says, a little bit after I had my first set of kids, he said, my wife had to physically hold me back from calling up all my former patients to apologize. Okay? Isn't that? That's what uniqueness is about. That's what it's about. Okay. So let's get to the issue. So what do you do here? So recommendation number one is basically to become mindful about this stuff, is to, as our kids are pulling us into something that is really getting us upset, we have to understand that parenting from an emotional place is just not going to work. You need the step back response. You need to understand that in order to be that symphony leader of playing the unique niggun of each of your children and giving them that unique source of nourishment, you have to pull back, strike when the iron is cold, deal with things a little bit later very often. Okay, obviously you have to keep your kids safe. You have to separate them. If two siblings are beating each other up, you don't then go look things up in a parenting textbook, okay? But what you do is you need to understand that the first step is A, if a kid is cutting, if one of your kids is cutting through you like a knife, try to get some insight into what's happening. What's it about? What's it triggering in your ghosts of the past? What's it about? Is it about your issues or about their issues? And if it's about your issues, try to remember the grudge, try to grow through conquering that. Okay? And try to allow them to be themselves. I can't tell you how many parents I've seen who heroically expanded their bumper sticker to let that in. Okay? So that's very, very important, step number one. Step one is look at the kid who's bothering you the most. Figure out what it's about. Ask your spouse. They may have some insights because they know you better than anybody. But not from a critical place. Understand and strike when the iron is cold. Some of you have heard me speak before about the power of the need to do the step back response, the need to go from the af to the shel rosh. The af is the immediate angry response. Interestingly, af is the nose. It's also the Hebrew word for anger. Okay? And interestingly, the primitive response to angry provocation from our children lies in the primitive brain right behind our nose, okay? The primitive limbic structures in the ancient brain. And interesting, we're told, how do you control the af? You breathe in and out slowly to allow enough time to go from the short loop of the animalistic connections to the longer loop of going from back here to up to the frontal prefrontal connections, which is exactly where, you know what lives in the frontal prefrontal connections? That's where control lives. That's where control lives. That's where our ability to hold on to and look and think. And so we put the shel rosh on every morning. So step number one is go from af to shel rosh. Very often I tell the story of Rav Baruch Ber Leibowitz in pre-Holocaust Europe used to have a special anger hat. He wouldn't allow himself to be angry at his kids or at his students till he put on the anger hat. And that gave him time from go from the short loop to the long loop, Erech HaPayim. Okay, that's Erech HaPayim. And to go from the af to the shel rosh. And there's something to be said about that. You'll never regret it. You'll never regret it. Almost anything that your child does that's upsetting you in terms of not reaching their uniqueness can be dealt with in that way. That's recommendation number one. So recommendation number one is more of a psychological recommendation. It's how you process it. Go a little deeper. Go a little deeper in terms of that. Recommendation number two is what's often asked of me is what happens, though, if the kid is cutting through you like a knife? So you say, and I'll say you have a kid with one of those temperaments that I was talking about, and they have negative persistence. They don't take no for an answer. I was asked to address that today. So there, what's usually the most helpful thing is called the rule of threes, and not to get too gimmicky or techniquey with you, but it's true. The rule of threes is to answer your pre-adolescent child once, explain to them why you're saying no to whatever it is they want. They may say, well, my friends are allowed to do it. I've yet to meet that friend, okay? I was talking to the last group. I just came back from Australia. I was doing some lectures in Australia. I just got back in the middle of last week. And there, I thought life might be a little bit different, you know, different kinds of issues in the Orthodox community there. I gave something like, what is it, 6 times 3? I think I gave 18 speeches there. Everybody there talks about the same thing. They talk about also about, you know, kids are always saying, but my friend's allowed. And nobody's met, the friend does not live in Australia. I thought maybe I'd find the friend in Australia. The kid's not in Australia. So it's fine for your kid to be upset. They just have to listen to what you say. The rule of three is simple. Explain it once. Hear them out once. Try to hear them. To be understood, first understand. But once you hear them out, you could say to them, now you could ask 3 more times for what you want. I'm giving you a free pass. 3 more times. First time they ask for the same thing, say, Okay, that's once, but don't get pulled into the content. Just say that's once. You get two more times. Don't be angry. Don't be upset. Don't reflect anger back to them. When you reflect back anger, they just get incredibly more upset at you. Then number two is you say that's twice. You get one more. And then the third time, say, okay, great, that's three times. Now I'm going to ignore you. Usually the kids will laugh at you, believe it or not. And if not, they'll still drive you crazy, but at least it gives you something to do. It gives you a mechanism. I find that this works quite well, actually. It's one of the more effective things in terms of working with a kid whose uniqueness includes that kind of negative persistence. You ever think about Bari Nefashos? You ever think about what the words of Bari Nefashos, of that bracha is? Because it's really about uniqueness. Just this is a little bit of an ad from something that is said on a regular basis for those of us who say Bari Nefashos, okay? I'm sure everybody else is just washing and benching all the time. So it says, Baruch Chei Ha'olamim. I just got everybody so guilty. I'm sorry. Can I do the test, the Bari Nefashos test? You know, it's like, okay. So Baruch Chei Ha'olamim is, there's an obvious question. What does it mean, Baruch, right? We bless the worlds, the many worlds. There's only one world. So the obvious question is, why is Olamim in the plural form? And the answer is that it's contained in the beginning. Bore nefashos rabos v'chesronam. God is referred to as the creator of numerous living things with their needs and built-in limitations of every soul was created. Every human being, in spite of how gifted and well-rounded he or she might be, there is at least some areas of relative deficit. Olamim is, there are many different worlds, many different assets. Very often, there's an incredible diversity, which is part of what we need in order to make the world work. Okay, I'm thinking about the three kids who were most attention deficit, who sat in the back of my classroom in what was then Highline growing up, okay? Now, I guess, after. And the way they were totally out of control red kids. So what happened to them? One is now a community leader, and probably, I don't know exactly where he is on the leadership of the school, but he's the boss of a lot of the teachers who he gave gray hair to. Okay? And the other I bumped into when I gave a talk in Israel last year. I asked him whatever happened to him, and he told me he was the founder of a certain moshav upstate in the northern part of Israel. That's a major city in Israel. And I thought to myself, my God, you know, I felt like of all the kids in our class, there's one kid who founded a city. He founded a city. It's a city, a very successful city. He's the father of the city. He's the mayor and the father of the city. This kid with a tattooed chest, because he'd get bored, and it's great to be that way. And there's incredible, you unleash him on the world. And the third guy is equally successful, as an incredibly powerful businessman, and is running Hatzalah. Like, you know, Hatzalah, they all have attention deficit, trust me. If you ever give a talk, one of the most fun things to ever do is give a talk to Hatzalah guys, because I know I can't, they'll put their beepers off, you know, if you bore them for a second. So you have to dance around the room, throw things at people, tell stories, sing, dance, otherwise they leave. All of a sudden, there's an emergency that clears out the room. So it's the best way to hone your speaking skills is to talk to a group of Hatzalah guys. But thank God for Hatzalah, right? What would we do without Hatzalah, right? So that's just something on that. So recommendation number two is to go from the Av to the Shel Rosh, take that step-back response, put on Reb Baruch Berra's hat, and do the planned discussions. And I'm going to give a final good. I'm good with time. Okay. So I want to give two recommendations illustrated with some stories and on uniqueness, and tie it to the parsha, and then end with one of my favorite stories on this topic. So let me give you the recommendation. I'm going to give you a recommendation. I was trying to think, how do you make uniqueness not fluffy? So I'm going to give two recommendations on things you could build into Friday night. Okay? Friday night rituals. Okay? And I'm going to illustrate this with some stories. Some of you may have heard this from me, but then it'll be chazar. Otherwise, take a nap. Okay? So it goes like this. It has to do with this week's parsha. This week's parsha has this incredible psychological insight. Next week's parsha. But this week's parsha has Yehuda, right? Yehuda is born. Leah says, I hapam odes Hashem. I have more than my fair share of children, having a fourth child. So the very word to be Jewish, Yehudi, is gratitude. Hapam odes Hashem. Hapam odes Hashem. Okay? So to be Jewish is to be grateful. Core Jewish value. So that's part one of this. Part two is next week's parsha. You'll see that there's the final showdown between Yaakov and Esav, and they're finally talking things out a little bit, and Esav says, I have Rav. You know what Rav means? Rav means I have a lot. But it means I have a lot, but it connotes, but it's not enough. He then accepted the gift from his brother. Okay? Because when you have Rav, it's the principle of relative. You never have enough. You never have enough. Rav connotes Ohev Kesev Lo Yisba Kesev. You never have enough. There's an inner emptiness that has to be fed by more and more possessions. Yaakov, in describing what happened in his life in the intervening years since they saw each other when Rivka sent Yaakov off, is what? What does he say? Yeshli, what do I have? Kol. Meaning, the same Yaakov that we read this morning who says, what does he ask of God? Beged lilbo shlechem lechol. All I need is, you know, give me my basic needs. Give me my basic needs. All I want is something to wear and something to eat. Once I have that, I'm happy. He stood for gratitude with what he had. Gratitude for the simplest things. Okay? Now, how did he convey that gratitude to Yosef? And I'm going to play that out and I'll get to my final two recommendations before I end with a story, and we'll get, hopefully have some time for a little bit of a discussion. And it goes like this. Priority one retreat. A number of years ago. Retreat for families of at-risk kids in our community. So Rabbi Brafman is up on the Rabbi Brafman is the principal of Yeshiva Farakwa. He's on the program. And what happens? There's a panel discussion before that. And the panel discussion has a group of about 8-9 kids who had left our way of life. They have different colored hair, different kind of tattoos and piercings. And they go, each one takes a turn saying, why did I leave our way of life? And it turns out it's all about uniqueness. Each one somehow did not meet the bumper sticker of our society, and that's where we went wrong with them. So one kid said, oh, me, I was sexually abused, nobody knew about it. So they find solace with equally marginalized peers. Other kid, I had a terrible learning disability, nobody knew about it, it wasn't diagnosed, I felt dumber and dumber and dumber, and then ultimately, so I started hanging out with kids who were just as marginalized as me. The next kid says, I came from a family where all that mattered was, you know, chesed or die. And they didn't say it that way exactly, and I just didn't have any natural sense of the ability to do that, because again, if you have that executive function deficit, your perspective taking isn't as well, and chesed doesn't come as easily to you. You could get there if it's harnessed, but it's not so easy to do. And each one after another, it was about their uniqueness eluded our grasp. It was a lack of recognition of their uniqueness. Now, the two recommendations I'm going to give about uniqueness have to do with learning to be grateful for the unique spark of each of our children. It's about the lesson of this week's parsha and next week's parsha. So, recommendation number one. Here's what happens. And I'll go back to what you said about my kids, okay? It's a totally objective father, okay? So, you know what's interesting about you giving me that introduction? Is I recently was a scholar in residence in Chicago. And I was having a meal at some people's houses. And it was Baruch Hashem, very successful Shabbos, and they had a bunch of times I spoke and had a very big turnout. But at the meal, somebody said, you know, we were trying to get our friends to come hear you speak at this big parenting event, but they said, I don't know anything about his kids. Why would I go to somebody until I know that he didn't mess up his kids? I don't want to hear a word he has to say. So next time I go to Chicago, I'm taking you with me, okay? Because they don't...
He was my group leader when I was in...
That's right, first grade, right, that's right. So... anyway, so Rabbi Brafman gets up to give the speak Friday night. He said, you know something? So I just noticed something very interesting. He said, when I saw each of you bench your child Friday night now. This is a Friday night program. It's a Shabbos, it's a Shabbaton. So bench is that some families have this beautiful, beautiful custom that Friday night they have all their children line up and they give them a blessing. And he says that when he said, you know something? When I apologize, I didn't know that I was supposed to. It doesn't. Yeah, I didn't know. Okay, then I apologize. I'll go to translating. I apologize. I'm usually good about that, but I don't know. He said when I noticed as parents were giving the blessing to each of their children, were benching each of their children, they related to them in a totally unique way, in a way that captured their uniqueness. So he says, you know something? He said, what I'd recommend is Friday night, if you have the ritual of giving your children that blessing, it's a beautiful, beautiful ritual, capture that uniqueness and fan the flames of that uniqueness throughout the week. Very interesting. Now, I didn't know what he was talking about at the time until I come home the next week. And the next week, my four kids line up for the benching. It's Friday night before you sit down to the meal, and my oldest kid is this big macho guy, much taller than me, and we have this macho thing going when I bench him. And my next daughter, Karen, who's here tonight and in another workshop, thank God, okay, because otherwise I'd embarrass her. She has chayin, right? She has chayin. So her chayin is captured. Chayin is, she's just a likable, lovable kid. She's, you know, totally objective. We have a witness here. I just have to get one more witness. And my next daughter, they all have chayin. They're all great in their own unique way. Is really, really funny. She's like one of the funniest kids you'll ever meet. You know, we could have her entertained here nonstop. So we have a jokey thing going when I bench her. And my youngest kid is the cuddler. My youngest daughter, she cuddles into me. She's actually learning in Israel this year. She's studying in a yeshiva in Israel, and she insists every Friday afternoon in Israel, I get woken up Friday morning, she calls me, and she asks me and my wife for a special bracha because she misses the cuddle. So we cuddle her over the phone, that we hug her over the phone. She needs it. She needs it. And she misses it. You know, at the beginning of the year, she was trying to capture what she missed, and she realized, I'm missing that bracha. So he says, capture the uniqueness. Great, great Friday night ritual. Wonderful Friday night ritual. You could try it, even if you don't have the minhag. I think it's something to think about. So listen to this. I tell over this story at a conference on at-risk kids. It was a bunch of my colleagues, a bunch of psychologists, psychiatrists, and social workers in Brooklyn. And I'm speaking to them on a Sunday afternoon. And afterwards, one of the psychologists comes over to me. He tells me the following unbelievable story. He says that morning he had a session with the kid who was beginning to become rebellious. Wasn't quite there, but he was beginning to become rebellious, a member of the community beginning to become rebellious. And the kid told him the following story about what had happened the night before. Saturday night in Brooklyn, he's walking down the main drag there, passes the pool hall, and you know what happens when he passes the pool hall? A kid... who he is the head of the group that he's been trying to break into. The head of the most troubled group in town invites him in and says, hey, Yossi, come on in. Come on in, you know? And he feels great. He's pulled in. He's been trying to break into this crowd. But these kids are into much more serious things. He's there for a couple hours. After a couple hours, casually, the leader of the group takes out some designer drug and gives it over, starts to give it over to Yossi. So Yossi tells his therapist Sunday morning, you're not going to believe what happened, Doc. He said, as I'm reaching for the drug, you know what happened? I didn't even want it to happen. But the look of love in my father's eyes the night before when he benched me comes flashing at me. And I realize my father knows I'm better than this. He expects better of me. He knows I'm better than taking this drug. I didn't even think. I took the drug, I throw it back in the kid's face, I run out, and I swear to you, Doc, he says, I'm never going back there again. Okay, the power of love, the power of expectation, the power of gratitude, and the power of uniqueness, of cueing into our children's uniqueness. So that's that recommendation, okay? The second recommendation has to do with some of the research on gratitude, and it goes like this. The research shows that when you take a couple hundred kids and you divide them into two groups, and half, let's say, are asked to write about five things a week that they're grateful for. Just spend a few minutes. Write about five things from the past week you're grateful for. The other half are asked to write about something from their weekly schedule. And you follow them over time. The kids who write about the things that they're grateful for, it transforms their week. Their week is suffused with more hakara satov, more gratitude. They feel happier. They even exercise more. It just sort of changes them. And the feeling lingers for another couple of months. Just from that simple thing of the habit of attention, of paying attention to what you're grateful for. So the obvious recommendation there is Friday night, go around your Shabbos table, okay, and ask each of your kids and you yourself, talk about one thing from the week that you're grateful for. Simple recommendation. Simple recommendation. Okay? And you can build it in. Now, the reason I'm saying this is once a week rituals actually have a very good chance, according to the outcome research in positive psychology, of being built into the fabric of your life. And here, it's about appreciating the uniqueness of each child. I'll tell you a story. I'm in Israel. I was talking to the last group. I'm in Israel again. It was during the Intifada, and I'm exhausted there, and I'm running and doing a lot of work with a number of the trauma therapists in different parts of the country. And I had to rush a plane back. I was the guest speaker for the Chief Rabbi of England, for Sir Sachs, Rabbi Dr. Sir Sachs, Sir Rabbi Dr. Sachs, whatever. He has a conference every 2 years of all of his rabbis, of all of his shuls, and he asked me to be the visiting scholar. So I had to catch a plane to Heathrow from Israel. It was a very tight connection. But I remember as the cab is taking me from Jerusalem to Ben-Gurion that I'd been invited to a friend's wedding. And I thought maybe I could make it. So I asked the cab driver to stop by. I say I'll pay him for his waiting time. And I go to this wedding that was one of the most unbelievable spiritual experiences I ever had in my life. It was outside. And the sun is setting over the Chomot of Yerushalayim, over the ancient walls of the ancient city of Jerusalem. And the weather's perfect. Perfect. Everybody's cell phone is off. Pretty amazing. That's a miracle in itself. The bride and groom, the Hasan and Kala, are suffused with joy like you. I never saw such happy individuals in my life. Real joy. Real joy. And there is not a dry eye in the audience. Everybody's crying hysterically because it just out of joy. It was like one of the most special moments I ever experienced. And I'm so happy that I went. And I rush back into the cab just like incredibly. And I rush, just make the plane, go to Heathrow to do my thing with the rabbis there. Actually, they play something called rabbinic cricket, which is one of the most amazing experiences to watch rabbinic cricket. A bunch of rabbis with their beards, dressed up in suits, playing rabbinic cricket on the lawns of Bournemouth. I think it has potential to become a huge sport, spectator sport. But that's another thing. If anybody wants to run with that idea, you could go. Okay, rabbinic cricket. But anyway, so that Thursday, whatever, I catch a plane back to New York, and I come back to JFK just in time for Shabbos. I'm totally jet-lagged, totally exhausted. I plop in front of my table with my family Friday night, and I just want to go to sleep. And what does my wife say? Okay, let's talk about one thing from the week you're grateful for. And I'm ready to kill her. Ready to kill her. I say, that's for other people. It's not for us. I'm exhausted. I don't want it. So she's going around. We're going around the table, and each of the kids is telling. And again, it captures their uniqueness. It captures knowledge about them. And it's something to be grateful for, and it's a unique. And it's something you build in. And I'm ready to just say, forget it. Please, let me beg off this week. And you know what pops into my head? I'd forgotten the wedding. It was such an event-filled couple of weeks. So much had happened. I'd forgotten the wedding. And as I share the memory of the wedding with my family, and as I feel it going from short-term memory to long-term memory, I realize two things happen. One is my family realizes this is something important to me. And they have that added knowledge about me. And I have it now as a permanent memory that I could rely on during times that I need to be nourished by that memory. Very important stuff. So what does this have to do with uniqueness? That's everything to do with uniqueness. Because uniqueness is about building the habit of gratitude, building the habit of attention to that which we should be grateful for. And along the lines with the two first set of recommendations, okay, how to expand your bumper sticker, how to work on yourself and how to do this is something that I think could bring this into your lives. I could either end with a nice story or we could just have a discussion for the last 5 minutes. What would you rather do? It's just totally up to you. You've heard plenty of stories.
Why don't we start from there?
Start with the questions. We've had plenty of stories. So
that question that you were starting.
Right. Yeah. Ask away, people. Don't feel like you're that kid before recess. Remember that kid who would always just before recess ask a question? You wanted to kill him. I still remember her. Every time I see her all these years later, I remember those lost spring days, you know. Yes.
Mm-hmm. When you're getting angry. Right.
How do you do that when so much else is going?
Yeah, almost always it'll wait. Almost always it'll wait. Now, you can't do it if there's a safety issue. So if kids are beating each other all up. But ask yourself, part of this uniqueness thing is you choose your battlegrounds and ask yourself, can it wait? Almost always, I shouldn't say always, but very often the answer is it could wait. And if it could wait, you could have a planned discussion where you sit down with the kid and you say, look, I'd like to talk to you about something that's been coming up. When's a good time? It's right away very different, and it's run by the frontal prefrontal cortex. You then sit them down, you shut your cell phone off, have somebody else watch the other kids, and you talk it out, hear their point of view first, then you say your point of view. It's going to lead to much more reflective kind of understanding on your part of what's going on. And it doesn't mean you don't have consequences. And it doesn't mean, you know, the key to parenting is the balance between love and limits. It's the balance between the rabbis tell us, between smol docha v'yamin mekarevis, the left hand pushing away while the right hand brings closer. Interesting, a well-known rabbi of the last generation who was an expert on parenting, Rabbi Wasserman, said, what happens if you put into play what the Gemara tells us? And you simultaneously push your child away with the left hand while bringing him or her closer with the right hand? You turn them around. You turn them around. But that's, you're right, it's very, I'm not saying you should walk away as if this is fantasy land. I know what it's like. I understand what it's like. More that you should decide, is this, now, obviously you may have to time kids out, but don't do it from an angry place. The key here is to do it from a calm place and choose your battlegrounds. My guess is only about 10 to 20% of things need to be dealt with immediately. And the other stuff, if you have, give yourself the luxury of looking at recurring patterns, it's going to have a much better chance.
So now we get to hear the story.
Well, or you could ask about your neighbor's children. That usually works. No? You don't want to do that? Okay. I'll end with this story. It's a nice story, and with this I'll end. It's one of my favorite bumper sticker stories. And it's about uniqueness. It's a story. It didn't happen too far from here. A high school junior who's going to a yeshiva in this global neighborhood is walking down the street on a Saturday night. I'm sorry. He goes and starts smoking marijuana in the stairwell of a main drag on Saturday night. And the head of his yeshiva, the principal, your equivalent, walks by, and he smells. He smells the smell, you know. If you went to school in a certain area, you recognize the smell. Even if you didn't do it, even if you never inhaled, you smell it, okay? So he sees the kid is doing it, and they have a zero-tolerance policy, and he kicks the kid out of his school that night. But nobody knows about it, and the parents call me in a panic. They say, could you do something? You know, we had no idea our kid was doing drugs, but could you help us? So I call the principal and I say, look, nobody knows about it. There's no big deal. Why don't you just let us, I'll make you a deal. I'll see the kid on a weekly basis. I'll call in with therapy reports, on his progress, and I'll fax you a once monthly drug screen. So he reluctantly says yes, and I start working with the kid, and the kid is a great kid. But his problem is he has older siblings who are each is a bigger star than the other, comes from a family that's heavily into learning. And he has an attention deficit and probably an undiagnosed learning disability, as I find out. He just can't. It's not that he won't. He can't. And he finds solace with some marginalized kids. He doesn't fit the bumper sticker of the family. And I'm seeing him for a while, and he stopped the drugs, but it's not going anywhere. He's just depressed. He feels like he can never be successful. So one day I ask him, after a couple of months of therapy, I say, who gets you? Who understands you? He says, my grandfather, my mother's father. So I say, okay. He said, okay, if I bring your grandfather in, I'll tell him a little bit about what's happening, and I'll have a session of you, your parents, and your grandfather, and we'll see where it goes. So I sit them down, and I tell the grandfather the story about what happened with his grandson. I had permission to tell him. And immediately he gets furious. And he turns to his daughter and turns to his son-in-law and he says, this is why I survived the Holocaust, he starts screaming. He says, don't you know the story of our family? He says, don't you know? And he turns to his daughter, he says, didn't you tell him what the story is of our family? And he turns to his grandson and he says, let me tell you the story of our family. He says, the only reason why the family is doing as well as it is because of the money that I support all of your older siblings so that they could learn. And that's why you live such wealthy lives. He says, but look, he says, the only reason the family even exists, the only reason you're alive is because of your spark. Because I have the same spark, he says. And he's in tears. He says, when I was your age, when I was 15, when I was 16, I was in Europe, I saw Hitler was going to kill us all. And I begged my parents, let us go, they're going to kill us. And my older brothers, the same thing. They were learning and they were stars. And I saw the way, I was always street smart like your son is here. And I begged, please, let's go. And then he turns to me, he says, they believed in shrinks back then, they would have sent me to somebody like him. Little Dick. This is the only time I ever saw him. And he was right. He was right. So he said, you know what happened? I run away. And I start the business that's now supporting all of us. But he starts crying, and his daughter is crying, and his son-in-law is crying, his grandson is crying. He says, you know what happened? All killed. My brothers, my sisters, my nieces, my nephews, my parents, they're gone. I'm the only one who survived. And he says, and he turns to his daughter, he says, it's because of this spirit, because of this spark. He says, if you can't make room for this spark, I don't have anything to do with you. And he gets up, slams the door to my office, drives away. I never see him again. And they sit there and they cry. And they expand their bumper sticker to let this kid in. Today, this happened over 20 years ago. Today, all those brothers are working for this kid who's now the head of the business. True story. I'm still in touch with him. Okay? True story. So with that happy note, thank you, everybody. And thank you for giving me this opportunity.